Okay, good afternoon. Apologies for the delay. We've had, as you're probably aware, there's no cabinet meeting next Monday, so there's been a fairly heavy schedule today. We've been working our way through that. You'll also be aware that the government has released its response to the CRI task force, so I thought I might just make some opening comments about that, invite the minister to make any comments that he might like. We'll take questions on that and then move on to anything else you might want. So as you know, the CRI task force reported back to shareholding ministers earlier this month. This was the first review of CRIs since their establishment in 1992. We see science as being at the heart of government, and we see these organisations as being able to deliver great long-term benefit to New Zealand and to our economy. The growth in our economic base has largely been off the back of world-class science. Our primary sector, in particular, has benefited from this. The government sees science and technology as a vital component of our economy. While science for science's sake has benefits, it's the practicality and ease of application which will help New Zealand most. We're saying, for example, that transferring their technology and developing stronger long-term partnerships with New Zealand's business is a core role for CRIs. The CRI Task Force report has been warmly welcomed by this government, and we will be acting on the Task Force's overall recommendations, which I'll outline to you now. Broadly speaking, both the Task Force and government want to see each CRI having greater clarity of role and its purpose. That means New Zealand's publicly funded research institutions are responsive to our economic needs, and that resources are directed to areas in which the biggest economic gains can be made. We are creating a better funding system for our scientists. In recent years, scientists have been forced to spend too much time applying for funding and filling out forms, rather than getting on with the business of producing high-quality, practical research. We're going to ensure CRIs have better, more secure funding with much less red tape to battle through. CRIs have had to report through multiple agencies too, so we've taken on board the need to simplify this in our move to bring together one combined agency to give science a stronger profile. We are putting the onus on the boards of CRIs to perform. This means that they will be held accountable for their CRI finances, the quality of the science, and the applicability of that science to the people who actually use it. In line with this, CRIs will have more robust performance criteria to meet so that they can be confident that they're delivering what they're delivering is going to benefit Kiwis and our economy. So, Wayne, if you have any comments you might like to make, and
just a few brief comments. This is the most significant reform for the last 20 years in the CRI system. It forms part of a fabric of reforms. We've been sorting out priorities from our priorities document last year. We've brought the ministry and the foundation together. That's to be implemented over the next 6 months or so. And now we're implementing the task force report. And as the Prime Minister said previously, science will be a feature of the budget. So it's a whole suite of reforms which is designed to get the public science expenditure much more effective for the benefit of the economy as a whole.
Any questions? Or
you allow him to keep any more of the island, which is one of the main parts of the dual
Well, we've broadly accepted the Jordan report. I mean, I asked Neville to run this, and I've been very pleased with the report. To deal with that issue directly, we are negotiating with each CRI from here on out a rate of return that fits them rather than having a fixed 9%. And we're also looking very carefully at building the surplus profits to build infrastructure for the CRIs collectively.
Correct.
Well, it will depend on their particular situation. As you know, some can do it relatively easily, ESR for instance, others struggle.
So it will more of the funding be secure in the long term?
Oh, absolutely. A shift from essentially 20% presently to about 40%. And that's the single biggest reform, actually. It's the one thing that science teams and business have been saying, this is a change that's essential and we're able to deliver it.
So are you saying that there will be
Correct, yes. We're moving essentially towards a longer-term, more strategic approach which lines up with their purposes. That was the thing that was particularly identified in the 2007 OECD report.
So did the last
things change over a 20-year period, you've got to ask yourself, why didn't the previous government do anything at all? They didn't. We are.
You're still putting some of that money at risk, though, aren't you? Based on improvements. Do you know what proportion it will be?
It'll be about 30%. If you take the total framework, some comes from the commercial sector, some will be longer term secure, and some obviously will be contested. And that's the right thing, because not all of their individual projects fit within the longer term, more strategic approach.
Is that also aimed at reducing replication of research and that sort of thing, you know, people going for the same money for the same project?
That's certainly an outcome we'd be looking for. Well, not so much a clear-up, but we do have an opportunity to replace a fair number of members of the boards, as indeed we did last year. That's more of a progressive process. And some of the boards have been performing very well, in fact.
Do you expect in a budget that whatever priority is given, it will be delivered through government agencies, being more fully funded, or will there be something left to the private sector?
That's really a matter for the budget that you'll have to wait for.
Okay.
Thanks, guys. Pleasure. We'll move on. Next week I leave for a visit to Washington, D.C. for the Nuclear Security Summit, and then travel to Ottawa for a bilateral visit with Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper. The Nuclear Security Summit is part of the vision laid out by President Obama in Prague to work towards a world free of nuclear weapons. The process has been given added impetus with the signing of a new strategic arms reduction treaty between Russia and the United States in the past few days. In Washington, I also have a number of bilateral meetings with some of the 46 leaders invited to the summit. My visit to Canada will focus on building on the already strong relationship between the two countries, and I will also be meeting key members of the Canadian Cabinet and business leaders. I'll return to New Zealand on the 18th of April. In terms of activity of the week, in terms of my movements this week, tonight I'll be attending a Special Olympics event in the West Foyer. Tomorrow I'll be in Auckland with Minister McCulley, and I'll be at the launch of the 2011 Rugby World Cup ticketing campaign. On Wednesday I'll be back in Wellington launching the new Visitor and Education Centre at the Karori Wildlife Sanctuary. Thursday sees me in Nainai, where I'll be opening the factory extension at Petronic Industries. And Friday is, of course, a public holiday. On that basis, there'll be no cabinet on Monday. We're in your hands.
What role do you see yourself and New Zealand playing in this?
Well, I think we can bring to the table the role of not only the honest broker that I think New Zealand always brings to these type of discussions, but also New Zealand's nuclear-free status is well known. And I think it does put us in a strong position to be able to argue the case for a world that's free of nuclear weapons.
Well, it's just turning back to mining and reports from the minerals lobby that they received a receptive response from a national as far back as 2006. Why didn't you put that up as an issue for the election?
Well, we hadn't formulated our policy then. There's nothing secretive about the fact that New Zealand is minerally well off. I think we've been well endowed for a long time in the history of New Zealand. But it's taken some time to work our way through, and indeed that's what we're doing at the moment, is working our way through our policy development. This is, at the end of the day, a discussion document, and what changes it might lead to are yet to be determined.
Did you discuss with any lobby groups or mining companies back before the election
No, I didn't know.
Did anyone else know of it?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
They could have, though, obviously.
Well, I haven't had extensive discussions with my ministers, but no, I certainly didn't.
I mean, the fact that you formulated a policy before the election that people in the party may have had discussions, did you deliberately keep this from the public?
No, and we're having a discussion with the public at the moment.
Yeah, but a discussion with the public and have a chance to vote on it is different.
No.
Labor's said today asking whether you received donations from the mining industry. Did you?
Well, the answer is I don't know. Any donations that the party receives are handled by the party president, and I'm just not involved in donations. I've never picked up cheques, and I don't intend to start now, so I wouldn't have a clue.
Okay.
That's always a wild accusation by Labor, and you know, I imagine it's factually incorrect.
So is there any chance we'll back off the whole thing altogether?
Look, it's you know, that's always a possibility, but I think there is potential for New Zealand to expand its mining activities. I think it's important to remember we are not in a binary situation at the moment. In other words, it's not as if New Zealand doesn't already mine and we're proposing that we should. In fact, New Zealand has extensive mining activities. I think there are broadly three tests that need to be met if we're going to extend our mining activities. Number one is I do think we need to demonstrate that there will be an increase in investment and in jobs. I think secondly we need to prove to New Zealanders that the economic benefits of extending mining will largely stay in New Zealand. And thirdly, I think we do need to prove that we can sustainably mine areas that we're promoting. Now, I think all of those three things are possible, but that'll be at the core of the discussion that we'll be having with New Zealanders over the next 6 or so weeks.
But what do you think about New Zealand involvement? Can we see the likes of solid energy playing a role in maybe extending into mining a little bit?
What kind of... Well, solid energy is already a very large miner, of course, and 100% government-owned, but you know, that is a possibility that they have an extended role in the future, but it's too early to tell. That's one possible way, but I think it's also worth remembering that in terms of the overall extension of resources and mining, Schedule 4 mining and certain aspects of that are one element of it. So, for instance, you know, we would like to expand our activity in the oil and gas sector. There are well-known possibilities in the lignite sector. So there's lots of different options available for us, and solid energy may or may not play a role in some of those things.
The Parliamentary Commissioner for the Environment says that under current legislation, the surgical mining you talk about can go ahead in Schedule 4 land.
Right.
It makes her wonder why you're doing this.
Well, the advice we've had is that that is more difficult, so this would clarify that.
Has the government sounded out mining companies about whether they're actually interested in mining these areas? Is there a possibility you'll go through this whole exercise, which could be potentially politically damaging, and come out at the end of it with mining companies actually not being?
Well, I guess that's always possible. I mean, ultimately, mining companies will only step forward and progress these areas if they believe it's economically viable to do so and that they can make money. But, you know, it'd be my sense that given the mineral wealth of New Zealand, and that's always a subjective matter, but I think over time we've proven to be a minerally wealthy country, then those opportunities are there, and partly it'll be a willingness of the government to engage with them. Well, I haven't had direct discussions with those mining companies, but I would imagine if the opportunities are there, they'll take them. They certainly have in the past where it hasn't always been easy.
Has anyone at the government had a discussion?
I'm sure Gerry Brownlee, as Minister of Resources, has met with those companies. I imagine he wouldn't be part of his daily ministerial responsibilities.
And have you reported
on that at all to
them, on their interests?
Not really, no.
Not really? Or?
Well, I don't recall any great discussions about it, but I'd be surprised if he was advancing if he didn't believe those companies would step forward if an opportunity was there. Look, I think it's always a difficult issue because, by definition, some important facts often get lost in the telling of the story. For instance, I think a lot of New Zealanders would have been surprised to find out that we already have 82 mines operating on the conservation estate. I think a lot of times the TV pictures use pictures of open cast mines when we're not proposing open cast mining, but that's the pictures that they have on file. I think you'll always get some people coming with very emotive responses. I think the bulk of New Zealanders will go back and I think in broad terms apply the tests that I described earlier. If there's enough in it for New Zealand, if we make enough money out of it, if we can do it in an environmentally sustainable way, I think you will find that there's the bulk of New Zealanders will support it.
Have you had any advice about how it would say it's been involved in
the No, I haven't had any advice about that, no.
Have you had any update or progress on the Auditor General's investigation into Gilbert?
Well, I haven't had any discussions directly with Mr. Heatley. I understand that he's either had or is having some dialogue because as part of natural justice he has to be given a copy of that report And on the back of that would be my expectations that in the foreseeable future that report will be tabled. So but I don't know much about it.
Has he been given a draft report?
I think he might have, but I haven't had any discussions with him.
Has that been supplied to your office?
No, it hasn't, no. We're effectively not an interested party. If, you know.
Are you looking, or is the government looking on track to release a decision on Fletcher and Seabed early next month?
Yes, I mean, things are progressing well, and there was another discussion at Cabinet today.
So we might be looking at the next couple of weeks?
Yes, my expectation would be this week, actually. Yeah, I think looking at the discussion document, I think it's canvasses all of the issues. I think it spells out fairly clearly the options. It does present a number of options for people to consider. It's a thoughtful document, so I think it provides a credible way forward that's better than the current legislation that's on the books.
Have you reached agreement with the Māori Party?
Well, they seem happy with the progress. They've attended the cabinet meetings when the paper's been up. They obviously, you know, they care greatly about a repeal of the 2004 law, but they would acknowledge that iwi and hapu up and down the country would have a different view about what should replace it. I don't think they propose to speak for every interested party. But this is, I think, a very solid document to go and have that discussion with all New Zealanders.
Is customary title still part of the next
Well, I think rather than engage in a detailed discussion, you won't have to wait too much longer before you get a copy of it.
So you're putting out an options paper and now you've got another options paper.
Yeah, well, the first one, don't forget, was a review, wasn't it? It was a ministerial review and recommendations that came out of that. From there, we've gone away and effectively developed what we believe is a credible alternative to the current legislation. And there are a number of proposals within that by sections.
You're looking to have legislation introduced by August.
Correct.
Is that going to still be on track if this is not actually your final position that we'll see in the next couple of weeks?
Yeah.
No,
and so, you know, what it means is we've got a consultation period which will run for about 4 weeks. Once we've had an opportunity for New Zealanders to digest that and for us to assess the various aspects, because there's a number of aspects where there are alternatives, and then at that point draft some legislation if we can reach agreement and move from there.
So is there a clear government's preferred position clear in that discussion document?
That's right. In each of the areas, the government's preferred position is highlighted. Well, there's a number of areas that you can go through in the document.
So the Auditor General, Mr. Heaper, you said you weren't a respected party, you were the Minister of Ministerial Services. So
yep.
Does that mean that this focus so far has been tightened on Mr. Heaper, and the wider aspects you have to look at are
Well, I think Min Services get a copy of it, but as Minister, I haven't, and I haven't seen it.
But the decision on the ECAN
commission? Yeah, well, Cabinet made those decisions today. And it's my expectation that Nick Smith and Rodney Hyde will communicate those decisions within the next few days.
The IMF's been out the past week, and it says you're not doing enough to cut government spending. What's your view of that?
Well, you know, we're either criticised for doing too much or doing too little. The way I would look at it is we've done a good job relative to other countries around the world. So, yes, of course, we've been running deficits to navigate through the recession, but we're holding new budget spending at $1.1 billion. We'll be doing that into the foreseeable future. It's roughly around about a third of what the previous government did. You can see from the release, of the seven-month Crown accounts, how we had done a better job of reducing expenses or expenditure in that area than others had thought. We've cut around about $2 billion over 4 years out of expenses. So, look, I think relative to the conditions we find ourselves in, we've done a good job. It's never easy. There's a constituency for every dollar that a government spends. And as you can see, when we reduce expenditure in certain areas, it meets with people who don't find that favourable. So I think relative to other countries, we've done pretty well.
It's easy to do more.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, the areas they're talking about are working for families, student loans, doctor's visits, a number of areas that were expanded by the previous Labor government on a universal basis. We campaigned on many of those things, and it's not my intention to break those campaign promises.
Thank you.
McCullough said over the weekend that you won't be dropping the travel ban on the Fijian government. Do you still stand by that?
Yeah, there's been one government or Fijian minister that's been here in New Zealand. The reason for that was it was a regional-wide meeting. Now, that would be the same, for instance, if we were going to have a discussion about PACER. From a trade perspective, the Fijian minister would probably be invited.
But it was about soccer, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was sport. Well, it was sport in the region. But as a general rule, the travel ban remains, and we've got no intentions to change it.
But what was so important about football?
Well, it was a regional-wide meeting, and on balance, we decided that it was appropriate for the minister to attend.
But there were 10 other ministers there. Surely it could have happened without him.
Yeah, it could have, but it was a regional-wide meeting. I mean, that's the test.
Wasn't the agreement for the PACER talks that Fiji...
It would be outside. Yeah, be kept. But then you can't rule out if you had another conversation, they mightn't come at some point.
So you're saying that you would be happy to see Fiji ministers attend actual PACER talks?
No, what I'm saying is that there's always an example of a regional-type meeting where a minister could come. But PACER, you're right, they won't. As a general rule, they're outside and we advise them.
Doesn't that seem kind of a mixed message, though?
No, I don't think so. I mean, look, the travel ban applies to those in the regime and the family of those in the regime. That means if they want to travel to New Zealand for a personal or private reason or some other particular reason they've got, as a general rule, the answer will be no. But in the case of where we think there might be some regional benefit, then we reserve the right to allow them to come in. We did that in the case of the Fijian sports minister that came for a football meeting here.
Do you think there's a possibility?
No, I don't think so, really. They are. Yeah, well, I mean, they'll obviously have huge focus on both, but I suspect at differing times. The reality is it's going to be a tight year next year in terms of all the things that we have on the schedule. But, you know, we've got a commitment to host the Rugby World Cup, and clearly we have an election commitment.
Do you have an election after the Rugby World Cup?
There is, actually, yeah.
So
do
you have any thought
to
having the election before the Rugby World Cup?
I think that's very unlikely.
So we might look at maybe a late October or early November election?
Well, I'm not rushing to work out the election day today, but obviously I've had a brief and cursory look, and it's fair to say there are more limited options in 2011 than there would be in other elections. Oh, I'm not going to give that to you today, but you probably don't need a PhD from Oxford University to work out the dates are pretty tight. No, I mean, the leadership of the ACT Party is a matter for ACT and not for National.
Just on another matter, do you agree with Justice Eddie Jury that the Waitangi Tribunal's work is hampered by too many lawyers?
Look, I haven't seen the context of his comments, so I'd be reluctant to, you know, to take them out of context.
Okay, given National's aim is to settle treaty claims by 2014, do you think the tribunal will still be relevant?
Well, it's got an important role, and we've always supported that role. In fact, we've increased its funding to allow it to carry on out that work at a faster rate. There's a limit to the number of historians and the amount of work they can process, but we're supportive of the Waitangi Tribunal.
After 2014?
Well, our aim is to try and settle the claims up to 2014. Whether we achieve that, well, let's wait and see. Yeah, I think so. The indications we've had overseas are that things are looking quite good. I mean, it's a world-class event. People want to come to New Zealand. We're a safe environment for a tournament of this magnitude, arguably the home of rugby in a sense, you know, from New Zealand's point of view. So, I think we'll sell those tickets.
And improving economic conditions should be helpful for that.
Yeah, because I mean, if you look at the expectations for global growth, you know, by 2011 they're looking much stronger than they are today.
New Zealand, again, would be well cleared for an unexpected surge in numbers?
Yeah, I mean, the advice I've had from the tourism ministry is that they've upgraded the expectations of overseas visitors from 70,000 or 75,000 now to 85,000, and I don't think you can rule out numbers being higher than that. So, you know, it's obviously incumbent upon the government to do the best we can to run the best tournament we can, but I think if you look at the way that the the tournament's going to be embraced, I think, not just from a sporting point of view, but as a place to showcase New Zealand, the festival of, you know, 4.4 million New Zealanders, then I think we're in good shape.
Do you think Fiji shouldn't have been dropped from the Commonwealth?
I mean, sorry?
Do you think Fiji should not have been dropped from the Commonwealth?
I mean, no, I supported the move of Fiji. Yeah, I supported them being excluded.
But surely it would benefit the region, wouldn't it?
Well, it was an appropriate sanction in my view.
Do you think that there's a concern over the Rugby World Cup that the crisis might be too high for New
Zealand? Look, for the vast bulk of games, until you get into the semi-final and the final, the price is consistent with what you might pay in New Zealand for a test match. There's no question that the semi-finals and finals are far and above what you would normally pay to attend a sporting fixture. But they're also almost a one-in-a-lifetime opportunity for people to go. And I think there will be plenty of New Zealanders, as much as they'll sit there and say, gosh, that's a lot of money. They'll also want to be part of the action and be there and experience that. And I think if you go back and ask New Zealanders who paid, you know, pretty high prices, relatively speaking, back when the last World Cup was here in 87 or whenever it was, I think they'll say that they got value for money. So I think you will see New Zealanders stump up and pay, you know, big ticket prices for the semis and the final. But they'll be under big competition from overseas visitors who will come out here and participate in those two events. Okay.